Big Brother, mainstream media, government cover-ups. You want answers? Well, so does he. He's Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network. And now, live from Austin, Texas, Alex Jones.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. It is Friday, the 8th day of October 2010. Coming up in 30 minutes, we have the husband and wife joining us from New Hampshire who are oath keepers. I actually have the CPS report. They cite the fact that he's an oath keeper, part of a, quote, militia, as the main reason that they took the child. And we're going to get Ron Paul's take on that. Congressman Ron Paul joins us for the next 30 minutes. We really appreciate him joining us in his busy schedule. We're going to talk about the economy, the situation with Iran. Of course, what he talked about a decade ago is now unfolding, the financial collapse. Congressman Ron Paul, thank you for joining us today.
Good to be with you. Thank you.
So much is happening, but I saw a report yesterday put out by CNBC, also Zero Hedge, that the Federal Reserve is now the second largest holder of U.S. Treasury bonds. They own $821.1 billion. So not just the communist Chinese are basically controlling this country, but now the private Federal Reserve.
Yeah, and obviously they had to do that or interest rates would have popped up. But, you know, in some ways, if you're looking for some benefits from that, just think when we have true reform, there's no reason for the Treasury to pay these bills to the Fed. In an effort to go through a transition, it'd be nice if we could honor, you know, the Treasury bills held by private individuals who, you know, naively bought our government debt. But we do not have to pay that when we have our reform. We just throw that out because they're holding the debt. And if we had a new system, it wouldn't be necessary.
There was a headline in Market Watch of the Wall Street Journal yesterday with one of their analysts saying that they believe it'll be the end of the Federal Reserve by 2012. More and more, even mainstream media is sounding like Congressman Ron Paul.
Yeah, I'm amazed at the progress we've made with stations like yours and many others and on the Internet who have joined us. I'm sure you can remember 3 years ago, this was a non-event. You know, to talk about the Fed, we were still considered, you know, way outside kooks to even bring the subject up. But it is frequently discussed on the business channels, at least, not the political channels as much as the business channels. They're starting to realize that, the Fed is responsible. So I keep harping at it that if you want full employment, that's why I always keep a door open for the left, because they always preach we care about the poor and we care about jobs. Well, they do. They have to look at monetary policy and just look how this system destroys the middle class. The first people to lose their jobs are the people who were supposed to be helped by the Barney Franks of the world. And here, they end up losing their houses, losing their jobs, and who gets bailed out? You know, the big mortgage companies, the big gamblers, the ones who made billions of dollars when the bubble was being inflated, and now they're still making money. But I think the people are waking up. I think they're much aware of what's happening. The Fed is not going to get off the hook. No matter what they do, they cannot escape the blame.
Well, we've got this outside branch of government that's private that you've tried to audit, and now they've positioned us to where they're the second biggest owner of our debt, along with communist China. I don't know which one is worse. I mean, we're clearly being conquered economically through this fraud, but because it is a fraud, if we just stand up and say no to it, as you said, we have no responsibility to pay this money.
Yeah, and the time will come. I mean, the default is on its way, and Bernanke actually is very sympathetic to inflation, and he also understands that printing money causes price inflation, and when you have the price inflation devaluing the currency, this literally reduces real debt. So if he can double prices and double it with doubling the money supply, the debt goes down by 50%.
Gosh.
He's just disappointed that the prices aren't going up fast enough, so the devaluation is bad, it's horrible, but he even wants more of it.
Amazing. Stay there, Congressman. When we come back, I want you as an economic expert in this area and who have obviously been part of the testimony and hearing so many times researching this to break down what devaluation of the currency means. The Federal Reserve was on the news, as you know, yesterday, saying, yes, we want inflation to fix the debt. So explain to people what that means and solutions out of this crisis on the other side with Dr. Ron Paul.
He's the T-Rex of political talk. Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network.
Back in 1999, when they got rid of the Glass-Steagall Act and allowed the private megabanks to start issuing even more counterfeit financial instruments, Ron Paul said, this will cause this country to collapse. This will overextend the empire. And I remember him even putting the number on it, you know, that he would say clearly in the next 10 to 15 years. Well, here we are 11 years later, and it's not prophecy. It's just good economics, strong free market understanding of what's happening. And the congressman joins us in the short segment. We were getting into the situation of the private Federal Reserve being the second biggest holder of U.S. Treasuries. Over $821 billion, close second to communist China. And the congressman has been talking about the collapse that we're going into, and we have all the economic numbers there. We never left the recession, and by most yardsticks, we're in a depression. So can you give us a forecast from your deep research and the word you're getting up there on the banking committee about where we are, Congressman Ron Paul, and the Fed's signals to accelerate the monetization of debt, clearly driving the dollar down and gold up?
Right, and although we can be optimistic about what's changing in the country, a lot of attitudes are improving. There's a better understanding of free market economics and Austrian economics and the importance of gold and how significant the Fed is. In Washington, no attitudes have changed. Bernanke and others, Geithner, these guys will just, they have their wall, their back up against the wall. So instead of saying, hey, maybe I was wrong, which they're incapable psychologically to do, because that means they've invested 30 or 40 years in promoting this nonsense, they can't admit that. So the worse things get, the more they continue to do bad policy, and that is spend, borrow, inflate, and regulate. They think regulations can compensate for the market regulating, and therefore they can make, you know, they can do this economic planning through monetary policy. So nothing has changed there. So what that does, it guarantees the prolongation of the problems that we have. You have to have the liquidation of debt, and they will not permit the liquidation of debt. They just transfer the debt from their privileged friends over onto the taxpayers. So if you look at all the mortgage debt and the derivatives, that's what we bought. It's horrible that they have 800 and some billion dollars of treasury bills, but they have over $1 trillion of all this other bad debt, which is probably worthless. Should have been sold on the market for what the market would pay for it, but they bought it for these banks at the nominal rate. It's criminal, and it's just going to lead us to runaway inflation. All debts by government, when it gets out of hand, the debt gets liquidated. It doesn't get liquidated by them for refusing to pay the debt. It's liquidated by passing out money that's cheap, and that's what devaluation is all about. They're devaluing the currency on purpose, sticking it to the person who might want to save or who has to live, you know, close on the margin. They get the higher prices. They lose their jobs. They lose their savings. And Austrian economics, and Mises pointed this out, that when you destroy a currency, you destroy the middle class. And that's what we're witnessing right now.
That's right. All the economic indicators are that the middle class is evaporating before our eyes. Here's the Wall Street Journal yesterday. Fed officials mull inflation as a fix. So they've always denied that they were using inflation to basically cover up the massive debts. Now they've gotten so desperate they're shifting gears. And Bernanke's saying, okay, we are in deep trouble. We are in a crisis. But I've got the solution. We're going to further devalue the dollar, but the answer is, according to his statements in the G20 statement, is this coordinated lowering of currencies. But they claim that that would stop any type of currency war. But as you know, Congressman, the currency war is now on. And so just as we saw Weimar Republic Germany or Zimbabwe in the last few years in, of course, Africa, or a decade ago in Argentina, once you get to a tipping point, a flash point, the devaluation accelerates. Are we nearing a flash implosion point, or will it just be a continual devaluation?
Well, there eventually will be a crash of the dollar. the whole policy makes no sense. Just like we got into trouble by spending and borrowing and inflating, so we do more of it. But the whole idea that it's good for the people to depreciate their money, devalue the money. That means if you have $100 in the bank, tomorrow, the next week, it's maybe worth 95 or 90. It's a criminal theft is what it is. But that's what they call good policy. And all the countries of the world are doing this. And it does go down gradually. And it doesn't go down, you can't calculate it. If the Fed increases the money by 10% every year, that doesn't mean prices go up 10%, every year. What happens is, there's productivity that keeps prices down. There's the psychological factor. There's trust in the dollar. There's trust in the politicians. So you might have a steady erosion of the key currency, which is the dollar, which has happened. Since Bretton Woods, it's down about 35% against all other currencies. So it's hard to measure the destruction of the dollar just against currencies because all the other currencies are not much better. The only true test over the centuries has been the devaluation against gold. Gold measures value better than anything else. And who wants the value of their gold to go down in the purchasing power? It's always going up with the fiat money. But here we are, have the world competing to find out how fast they can devalue their currencies. It's absolutely insane, and it's very destructive. And the final stages, indeed, are rapid. Even though they're erratic as they inflate, there's finally a point in monetary destruction where everybody throws in the towel. Then they rush out of it, and everybody's working hard to prevent the panic. And they'll even interfere and get into markets to fudge the price of gold to prevent the panic. But when the time comes, if it looks like it's going to zero or lose a lot, the Chinese will dump it, everybody else will dump it, interest rates are going to go up, inflation rates are going to go up, the economy is going to get weaker, and then we as a country will be forced to have monetary reform, and the only way you can have true monetary reform is you have to change the role of government. We cannot continue to be the policemen of the world and run a welfare state and think that changing the monetary system will help. So you have to revamp the whole idea about what our government should be doing, what the role of government is. The proper role of government under the law is very limited according to our Constitution. And the monetary issue has been well defined in the Constitution. So the answers are there. And one of these days soon, it could be in a year, it could be in 3 or 4 or 5 years, but it will come. But the gradual erosion of the purchasing power of the dollar will continue.
Congressman, looking at the death of the Anglo-American empire geopolitically and economically, and as a doctor with the analogy, I mean, are we a year, 2 years, 3 years from the implosion of the empire? And then what comes out of that implosion of the empire? I mean, where is the United States going from here?
Well, there's no way anybody knows the precise time. But you can be certain that if certain events are occurring, like the depreciation of money and the continued inflating of the currency, it will come. But I'm sure we're getting much closer, and it could be within a few years. Now, when this happens, you can have two things. The status quo will not be maintained because all wealth is being shifted right now, like we said. It's being shifted away from the middle class and the wealthy, and the Wall Streeters and the bankers have all the wealth, and they'll probably have a lot of the gold as well. So we either shift toward going back to our roots and deciding the founders were on the right track and we reinstate those views, or we do something like what happened to Germany in the 20s. It ushered in a militant, evil dictator, which was Hitler, who scapegoated a group of people that he blamed everything on the Jews, and the hatred was built. And today we have our scapegoats around. Let's hate this group, let's hate that group. Blame them for the whole problem. So people are ripe for that. But in spite of that great danger, I still think we're making progress. I think we're really competing very well with those who are demanding a dictator. I haven't heard many people at our Tea Party groups, meetings that are demanding, things are so tough, what we need now is a dictator. What they want is less government and more power returned to the people.
this anger towards the free market. They're calling this inside crony capitalism to demonize the free market. And as things implode, the collectivists are going to try to sell the giant horde of poor people on looting what's left of the middle class in the name of socking it to the rich guy.
And they have to also remember that in fascism, the title of companies in the land doesn't go over to the government, and it just is the control. So the controls are there. I mean, what can you do in business these days without asking permission from 32 different agencies of government, and in the use of your land? I mean, the taxation and the use of your land is so onerous that we really have lost it, and yet we still have the title and responsibilities for it in order to generate the tax revenues that they want. So that separating that out too often, you know, the left will complain about a lot of things we're complaining about, but whether they're confused on economics or whether they do it on purpose, you know, they are, you know, really promoting socialism, so they like the idea of bashing corporations. But at the same time, we have to separate the two, the corporations that earn an honest living versus the one that live off the people.
Well, we know the big mega Fortune 100, almost to a company, are pro-globalist, pro-collectivism, to collectivize our wealth and transfer it offshore. They are the engineers of socialism, of all of this New World Order garbage that we're seeing. We've only got about 8 minutes left with the congressman. I want to move quickly, Cerningham. We're very appreciative for you joining us and all the great work that you're doing in Washington. We also see the system coming in against free speech, trying to regulate, tax the internet, ordering ISPs outside of law. I saw the headline last week where Obama said, well, he wants ISPs voluntarily to shut down websites if the government asks, just outside of courts. They're openly admitting we need a kill switch to turn the web off to keep you safe. The system is really getting scared of the internet because of the alternative media. Can you speak to that?
Well, I've been fighting that for a long time because I think that has been such a blessing to us to have the internet. But it becomes politically difficult for me, and you probably have been aware of some of my votes. Sometimes I'm by myself, because sometimes they'll say, oh, we have to do this because this is a bad guy. He's involved in drugs, and this is a bad guy. He could be a terrorist. He's a bad guy because he does pornography, and on. I mean, they pick the most vicious-looking people that have made use of the internet. Therefore, you say, oh, well, we're going to regulate them, not realizing that if you can preempt anybody that might be on the internet because they might be a bad person, that means they can preempt us. It's a prior restraint on our right to speech. And that is very, very dangerous. And, of course, most people realize the First Amendment isn't there to protect talking about the weather, you know, in benign speech. It's there to protect us against very controversial political speech. But if it moves in this direction, continues to move this way, then we are going to lose our right of political speech on the internet.
Congressman, dealing with the election coming up, we know it's a major political awakening, a realignment. Kind of mainline neocons have come in and tried to dominate many of the races, but we see establishment Republicans losing in the primaries, establishment-style Democrats losing in the primaries, Harry Reid now in desperate trouble, Rand 11 to 15 points ahead, depending on which poll you see, but that doesn't mean he's going to win. We still need to get behind him and support him. What can you say about your son's run in Kentucky and how important that is, and the overall political realignment happening? What do you see coming up in the election next month?
It probably won't be as good as we hope, but it's going to be good. There's going to be improvement, and most everybody is predicting that Rand will win, but I've urged him not to slow up. I mean, you got to assume that you have to fight for the last vote. But, you know, there will be a change. It will be a message, but, you know, we probably won't get the Senate, and the Republicans still have to prove themselves that they've learned the lesson, and if they do pass some good legislation and resist, then they face veto. So there's not going to be a dramatic change. There may be a significant improvement in just confidence in the system, in that maybe we can slow Obama up, which would be pretty good. Just think that if we'd have had a strong Republican Congress, House, just even a House, maybe Obamacare wouldn't have been passed. Maybe we would have been able to prevent some of these things.
And since you bring that up, just two final quick questions. Did you see the USA Today article where McDonald's and 29 other firms have been given a federal government exemption? They don't have to buy health care, but 29 million plus other small businesses do. Is that not incredible discrimination and literal divide and conquer, where if you are a big corporation, you don't have to follow the same rules as the people?
Yeah, it doesn't sound like equal protection under the law. You know, and if you were... The Constitution is very clear. If you are going to have a law, write a law for any of the legitimate functions of the federal government, it has to be uniform. And here, what have they done here? They have not made it uniform. They shouldn't have made the law in the first place. It was illegal. So then now where they're implementing it, it's not even legal either because it's not uniform. So, and that means that those numbers of people say, oh, okay, I don't have to worry. They took me out of it. But just think, you know, maybe the insiders think, hey, you know, if we have everybody, working at McDonald's and other places, and then they're losing their jobs or their salaries go down or something like that, then they might have, exerted a lot of pressure. So, no, equal justice is on the law. That principle should apply, and they shouldn't be allowed to do that.
Well, it just shows how every basic canon of our republic, of our Bill of Rights and Constitution, is just being completely flushed. Final question. We've got about a minute and a half on this, so you've got some time. I'm sure you've seen the Robert Shapiro quotes about what Obama needs as a major Oklahoma City or 9/11 attack so he can appear strong. Governor Ridge last year, the former head of Homeland Security, admitted that in 2004 for the election, the Bush people ordered him to put out fake terror alerts, which is literally yelling fire in a theater for political gain. Now we see all these new terror alerts with specific targets right before the election. Does that smack of an October surprise? I mean, even if attacks don't take place, just the act of saying the terrorists are going to get you and new bin Laden tapes. I mean, does that look suspicious to you, Congressman?
Well, I think it's just routine. I think that statists always want to generate fear in the people, whether it's economic fear or fear of somebody invading and want to attack. Because then if you don't go along with what the government tells you, then they can paint you as being unpatriotic and un-American. So in order for them to survive, and them means those people who like big government and statism and world empires, they have to have support from the people. And the people will tend to give the support if they get frightened enough, you know, like after 9/11, they were quite willing, you know, you heard the statement, I know I have to give up my freedom, but I'd rather them do that than be killed, you know, and they were willing to sacrifice their freedoms. So fear is the tool of the thugs in government, the authoritarians. They need to, you know, beat the drums. And then there's, once again, it's this thing, crying wolf. I mean, who believes this stuff anymore that they're about to attack? Well, we don't know who it's going to be or where it's going to be. If we did, we'd arrest them. So they don't know very much. So when the real one comes, even if they had good information, which generally they don't, I mean, they weren't very good.
Absolutely. Congressman, thank you for spending time with us. Everybody get behind Rand Paul. God bless you, Ron Paul.
Thank you.
We'll be right back. Stay with us, ladies and gentlemen. Now, ladies and gentlemen, we have the one, the only, Lou Dobbs joining us, and we're very honored to have Lou on. He really doesn't need any introduction, but he's a best-selling author, researcher, syndicated radio host, number one show for a long while on CNN. Until he was basically shown the door because he wouldn't compromise on Barry Sataro and the open borders. Lou Dobbs, great to have you on, sir.
You're with you, Alex. Thank you so much.
There's so much to talk about, but out of the gates, what's most important to Lou Dobbs on your radar, sir?
Right now, the most important thing is restoring the fundamental tenets of a democratic constitutional republic, and finding representation for the American people in Washington, D.C.
Mr. Dobbs, what do you think about all the news reports now that 90%+, and Napolitano admits this, of Homeland Security is pointed at libertarians, conservatives, returning veterans, gun owners, Ron Paul, Chuck Baldwin, Bob Barr? What's your take on the fact that Homeland Security has been basically set up for the American people?
Well, I think, Alex, that the idea that this administration has politicized not only the Homeland Security Department, but also the Justice Department has created an enemies list that is being prosecuted by the White House. I think, Alex, it's shameful. And what is, I think, is almost as shameful is the fact that the Fourth Estate has become something of a fifth column in this country, working as to aid, to abet the left-wing agenda of this administration and the Democratic leadership in Congress. I think it's a shame, it's an outrage, and the national left-wing, liberal, what you call it what you want to, mainstream media, is simply observing rather than applying critical judgment and performing its traditional role of oversight of our government.
Mr. Dobbs, you are a student of history, a veteran journalist, and so you were able to chart exactly what's happened, and you were now been proven right like a prophet. 28,000 plus dead in the last 2.5 years on the U.S.-Mexican border. Mexico is now completely collapsed. The poor woman has her husband killed. The media tries to imply she's a liar. Now the investigator that goes to look at it from the Mexican government has his head chopped off and delivered to the Mexican military. And then you're criticized for simply pointing out that we've got to protect our border.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it, Alex, that if you speak truth to power, as you and I do each and every day, that you are a target for those who want to ignore the breach of security in this country, the border that is no longer recognized, apparently, by this administration as being a demarcation of sovereignty. The suggestion in the national media that this woman, with her husband shot dead on Falcon Lake, is somehow not a victim any longer, but part of some sort of, I don't know, conspiracy, some sort of plot that has nothing to do with the failure of the government of Mexico, narco-state terror that is reigning across most of northern Mexico. This is madness.
I talked to a state senator from Texas who'd been in secret Homeland Security meetings last year, saying that they are preparing for the complete collapse of Mexico with Homeland Security to protect the border. And Rick Perry's been begging Obama, but I've had sheriffs on from South Texas and Arizona. I know you've seen, also them separately in the news, where they've asked for more funds, and instead of more funds, they've actually had their funding cut, and now they've pulled the Border Patrol back 10 miles on the Arizona border. 80 miles in, as you know, they've put up signs telling people, don't go down this road, don't go in this national park. We're really ceding areas now to the Mexican drug cartels and the Mexican military involved with them in many cases, so the La Reconquista is here.
Yes, and Alex, as you point out that moving the Border Patrol back, putting in a few hundred National Guardsmen to support a Border Patrol that is demoralized and not adequately deployed for the apprehension of illegal immigrants in this country, people need to understand that Felipe Calderon may have had something right and has not been given credit for it. Because Felipe Calderon, a year ago, said corruption is not only a problem south of that border with the United States. That comment went with almost no real serious coverage in the U.S. media. But there has to be an understanding amongst the American people that this level of corruption that we focus on in Mexico is being now met on our side of the border. There is no other way, when all else fails, look the cause and effect, as my father always taught me. And there is a reason that these borders remain wide open. There is a reason that illegal immigrants continue to cross over the border. There is a reason that Mexico remains the principal source of methamphetamines, marijuana, heroin, and cocaine entering the United States. We have a national media that doesn't even want to ask the question, why?
Because the big banks in the U.S., as has come out in Bloomberg and Reuters, have admitted in federal court they are laundering billions and even buying aircraft for the drug dealers.
Yeah, you know, there is no way in the world in which anyone in business or finance in this country could not understand that they have to have the complicit acquiescence of a financial system to move the billions and billions of dollars required to both supply and provide and buy all of these illegal drugs. We have been waging a war on drugs, and this superpower, the greatest economy on the face of the earth, the greatest democracy, hasn't been able to win. Now is the time to ask why. And the reason, the answer, in my judgment, lies in one word, corruption.
Absolutely. Lou, we were very honored to have you. You know, you have a very busy schedule, but we got you on about 14 minutes late.
I apologize for that, Alex. I apologize profoundly. I hope that you'll let me, if you will, make that up to you in any way I possibly can.
No. No, sir, you're gracious. Just because I didn't get a chance to talk to you before we went live, I just have to ask you on air. We've got to take a break in about 9 minutes. Is there a way to keep you to 40 after?
You betcha.
Sir, thank you so much, because I just want to make sure I can get to all these questions. All of this is connected. We see the mortgages, the derivatives package, the credit default swaps, China, Europe, American pensions being cheated. We now find out that there is systemic fraud. They're taking houses that they don't even have deeds to, in some cases that are paid for. All of that is happening. You had talked about this years ago. You talked about globalism killing our economy, NAFTA and GATT. Again, you've been a prophet. It's all happened, and it's the same banks laundering the drug money that are selling, you know, all these derivatives. I mean, this is really a criminal enterprise, and as Ron Paul has said, it's either us or them. Can you speak to that, Mr. Dobbs, from, again, loudobbs.com, if folks want to check the site out and the radio show out, can you speak to the private Federal Reserve, the globalist, the open announcements now of world government? I mean, everything's happening.
Yeah, it is happening, and there is a confluence of both policy initiatives and a great deal of rhetoric to reinforce and support those initiatives. And as an example, Alex, last week, Secretary of the Treasury, Timothy Geithner, said that it's very important that we find a much deeper, broader, much more profound role for the International Monetary Fund in the currency market. It is one of the most alarming statements made by a man who I don't even think should be in the post, frankly. I think he should have been fired, but then the guy has a few reservations about the people who would have to fire him. But the reality is that a larger role for the International Monetary Fund is another step toward international governance. It's that straightforward. It is that simple. This is an administration committed to taking this nation in a hard left turn.
G20 admits, headed up by Geithner, that they want a concerted global currency devaluation. Coordinated's their word. They said this last year. They said it this year. So this isn't really a currency war. They've made an agreement to sink all the currencies. And I'm sure you saw the Wall Street Journal last week, and Bernanke and others say, we're looking at inflation to, quote, fix the debt. That's Weimar Republic, sir. Exactly what you warned of many years ago. Can you speak to how amazing it is that they send that signal and say we want a global VAT tax on every nation to fund the very private banks that have engineered our collapse. I mean, that is global banking system taking over our society. I mean, please speak to that.
I have to laugh at this VAT tax, this value-added tax, this consumption tax that is suddenly the darling of the globalists, who really see in it the capacity to bring in even more private sector capital to turn it over to government, the public sector. We are in a struggle right now in this country, and I think in many parts of the world, but principally in the United States, a struggle between the public and the private sector that will determine whether or not we, the people, are working for our government or our government is working for us. And the idea that it is somehow logical, sensible, or makes any kind of economic sense for this great free enterprise capitalist economy of ours to be further burdened with a VAT tax, which rises to 20% in some cases in Europe, in addition to the tax burden that we're already under. This would bring the back of the free enterprise system in this country, in my judgment. And it's not an accident that these folks, these advocates for the VAT, happen to be led by this administration.
Well, Lou, I mean, watching George Soros, Media Matters, Outfits, and others demonize you on a weekly basis, myself, Ron Paul, and say we're lunatics making up world government, I've seen Time, Newsweek, Financial Times of London, Wall Street Journal all say world government is here. It's going to be run by the very banks that engineered the Washington Post says $600 trillion unpayable derivatives black hole. And we're just looking at what they're doing, what they're saying, and they think so little of the public that they go out and say we're crazy liars, Lou. I mean, sometimes do you pinch yourself like it's a dream or the Twilight Zone?
Well, like I think most Americans, I have a pretty clear idea of what this country was founded on, the values, the ideals that are critically important to the success of this nation over the course of more than 200 years. I don't believe those values and those ideals should be fundamentally transformed, as this president asked 5 days before his inauguration. I have absolute faith in this system, this political system of ours, this economic system of ours, and I think that anyone advocating a change is in, as President Obama put it, a fundamental transformation of America, had better be asking why and to what end and what would be the vision that would replace this great nation of ours. And why is it that this administration is so utterly committed to apologizing for America's success, for American exceptionalism, at a time when we need positive leadership to drive both our economy and our financial system. If one looks at what this administration has done since taking off, decrying the economy for a brief period while it succeeded in achieving an $800 billion stimulus law, it is now running down the economy and talking down markets rather than bolstering its small investor enthusiasm, small business energy. It makes no sense. This is the most negative leadership one could have imagined from a candidate who talked about the audacity of hope and hope and change.
Well, again, folks, Lou Dobbs joins us, loudobbs.com. But specifically, they've blamed capitalism and the free market for what's happening. But as Ron Paul and you and others have pointed out, the obvious, it's the mega banks who are not free market, who sell fraudulent derivatives, the mega banks that want the world government. They get our tax money. Basically conduited to them, banksters teamed up with government worldwide. What we're seeing happening here is happening all over the planet.
Yeah, and what we are watching, as you and I were discussing, is not only a coordinated effort to not, one would think that would be to support the strength of the dollar in currency markets and the forex market around the world, but instead to, in, it seems, seems at every opportunity to kick supports out from under the dollar. You do not hear this administration talking about a commitment to the strength of the dollar. And what is strange is to see this obvious, desperate desire on the part of Timothy Geithner, the Treasury Secretary, and the G20 members to defer to the dicta of the communist Chinese government. It's extraordinary. And then to carry on a national conversation instead of about the role of the Federal Reserve, what will be its level of commitment to stable prices in this domestic economy in particular, but instead talk about what China should be doing with the yuan, rather than talking about U.S. policy, as if the answer here is to dictate communist Chinese policy in the global economy. That's an absurdity.
Sorry to interrupt. Is that not treason? I mean, we know the policy for several years has been to allow quiet dollar devaluation. The G20 said that. But now they're saying it's a good thing. I mean, is that not fundamental sabotage against our nation to have a policy of devaluing the dollar?
The policy of devaluing, whether one wants to construct that as treason, Alex, I think that it depends upon whether or not one believes it will be first, it will be successful, or simply a discussion of a preferred policy. You know, I personally will not call it treason yet, but we will watch very carefully to see where these policy recommendations go, whether they continue. Secondly, the idea that these policy recommendations would focus with the national media's, again, acquiescence, the national media is not asking why should the Obama administration be focusing on the policies of a sovereign state, that is, the communist Chinese, rather than the policies over which we have control, the U.S. government's policies.
Yes, sir.
For which we are responsible. And by the way, by pursuing correct policies, it seems to me, Alex, that there's the difference between being international traders and being globalists is globalists don't care how much of a trade debt we run up or how many consecutive years of deficits we run. And those of us who believe in fair international trade believe it should be the precisely the same policy pursued by our trade.
Yeah,
partners.
Fair trade, not
mutual,
free trade.
Reciprocal, absolutely. Mutual, reciprocal, and balanced trade.
I mean, all of these international agreements are all one-sided, and you're absolutely right about that, and you've been proven right in spades. Now, a bunch of quick questions while we have you, sir. Again, Lou Dobbs joining us, syndicated radio host, former top CNN host. And let's get into that issue. When are we going to be seeing Lou Dobbs back on television with your number one show? Everybody is just basically demanding it. When are we going to see Lou Dobbs back on television?
I think we'll know probably here in the next month or so when that will be.
Lou, another question back to banking. I'm sure you've seen the mainstream news articles and CNBC where the government's saying we may take over the private pensions to protect them after they've destroyed them and put a tax on them. Boy, I mean, is that a recipe for revolt politically?
Yes, it is. That is a recipe for rebellion, a peaceful rebellion. There's going to have to be an accounting. And an accounting in this case means people have to understand the taxpayer, the private sector taxpayer, simply can no longer afford to support public sector employment that provides salaries well beyond those of the private sector for like work and provides retirement and health care benefits far in excess of anything that the private sector taxpayer has for himself or herself.
All right, Lou Dobbs, look forward to speaking to you again and seeing you back on television. God bless you, and say hi to your wife and your great family. We are back live, and for the rest of this hour, Judge Andrew Napolitano, former state judge, number one show now on Fox Business, going to Daily, weekdays. It's so successful. Just out of nowhere, he comes on, boom, number one. I'll guarantee you they put him on main Fox. He would beat everybody on that network, even if they put him at 10 o'clock at night. And that's what I told him, you know, 6-8 months ago when I knew he was getting his weekend show. I said, you watch, it's going to have, you know, massive ratings. And you were like, I just hope to, you know, do okay. And you remember on air and off air, Judge, I told you.
You did, Alex, and you were right, and I have been surprised and delighted at the generosity of viewers. We've been doing very, very well, and management's decided to take us daily, and we expect that that will happen before Thanksgiving.
Daily on Fox Business.
On Fox Business. We will continue the show on weekends. Basically, we will take one of the five dailies and run it as the weekend show, but our prime work will be prime time. I don't know the time. It'll be prime time on the Fox Business Network with the full support of the Business Network and many, many cross promotions on the Fox News Channel and my continued appearances on the Fox News Channel and my continued fill-ins for Glenn Beck, which I'm doing as soon as next Tuesday.
Are you influencing Glenn because he is getting more and more hardcore? Last night, we played a clip earlier in the show. He talked about the Fabian socialists wanting to poison the water supply. And
I don't want to take credit for influencing him. I will tell you this. We spend a lot of time together. We do a lot of speaking gigs together. When you travel with Glenn, you travel first class. So we're in a small private jet, and we do a lot of talking. He has told me that I have changed his mind on two issues. One is the Patriot Act, and the other is the morality, lawfulness, and constitutionality, or lack thereof, of torture. So I will only take credit for those two areas, which are profound. I did not hear what he said about the Fabian socialists, and I didn't hear what he said about poisoning the water supply until you told me, because I was on another show last night when he said that. But I'm not surprised that he said it. I'm happy that he's issuing those warnings. And, Alex, those warnings are resonating with people. You've been saying this for years. Now he's saying it between the two of you. That is a monstrous audience hearing these things.
Well, every day for 2 years, I have shown the quotes from EcoScience where Holdren said reduce population, a planetary tyranny to do it, forced sterilization through the water. Beck quoted EcoScience word for word last night. He played George Bernard Shaw. I've been critical of Beck on torture and the police state and things he supported. But I mean, it shows one thing. The mood of the country has changed. If Judge Andrew Napolitano has the number one show on Fox Business and is getting a primetime show weekdays, and Glenn Beck is now able to go on the air and talk about things that 15 years ago I was called a lunatic for when all I was doing was reading their own statements.
Well, you have to add to that and I'm not just blowing smoke at you, you have to add to that the phenomenal success of your own show. People have awakened. When people ask me about the Tea Parties, I take them back to my youth. This is before you were born, when Barry Goldwater ran against LBJ. That is the last time I can, and I was 13 years old, that's the last time I can remember as serious and as profound a debate about the Constitution and the role of the federal government in the lives of individuals in the past 50 years.
And Goldwater came out and quoted the Trilateral Commission's plan to set up world government, how the banks would bankrupt us. And now here we are 40-something years later. It was like Barry Goldwater was a prophet.
Exactly. Goldwater was terrific. To me, the Tea Parties are bringing, except on defense, because I think he would have waged offensive wars, which you and I and most of the folks listening to us now would not.
I agree.
And it's like saying, you know, aside from what happened in the theater, Mrs. Lincoln, how did you like the evening? Because it's a big except. But generally, on the role of the government in the lives of people, generally, unlimited government, generally, on sound money, he was terrific.
Okay, Judge, we've only got you here for about another 20 minutes before the show ends. I want to race through a bunch of issues and then find out what is most important on your radar.
Go right ahead.
But I would imagine, being so well-read, you know the Supreme Court justices and the LA Times covered this. Here's the headline. First Amendment ruling destined to kill internet free speech. They said that in the case of the funeral protesters, who I disagree with, but it's their right, that they are going to restrict rallies, protest, things that hurt people's feelings. England has just passed similar laws. The Cybersecurity Act did this. They couldn't pass the cyberbullying last year, and so they're now legislating from the bench. They have signaled and said that they are going to rule against rallies and demonstrations that are hurtful. And one justice said this will also affect internet speech. That then dovetails with Microsoft proposes government licensing internet access. Can you speak about the state of free speech in this country? Here's another one. Obama administration pressures ISPs to censor websites without even an order. The White House just tells them what they want taken down outside of a court, and it happens. I mean, this is becoming Maoist China.
Well, I disagree with the view of those who say the court is going to go against free speech. I was not in the courtroom. I read a portion of the transcript of the oral argument, and I interrogated the Fox reporter who was in the courtroom. That Fox reporter, not a lawyer, but a person who covers the Supreme Court for Fox, is of the view that it's going to go in favor of free speech. And this court, and no court is perfect, and a lot of judges, most of them legislate from the bench, but this Supreme Court, with Stevens on it before Kagan got there, invalidated laws that prohibited the slaughter of animal on tapes, a horrible thing that I oppose, but free speech. Invalidated laws that prohibited corporations and labor unions and advocacy groups from getting involved in free speech. I believe that this case is going to go, as horrific as the message is, in favor of the freedom of the messengers in this case.
Okay, well, let's hope you're right, but we'll find out soon. But the other issue is, what about all these moves with cybersecurity, the Obama kill switch, all these different...
Well, that stuff has to be challenged, and it has to be challenged in a couple ways. One, the way you're doing it, by exposing it, because most people don't know about this unless they hear it from you or Stossel or Beck or me, because there are very few national broadcasters addressing this. And secondly, it needs to be challenged in the political arena. The people who do it need to be voted out of office or exposed and forced to explain themselves, in which case they'll be forced out of office. And then, of course, it needs to be challenged. But the court has been pretty good on First Amendment. I mean, the court has let circuit court opinions stand, which invalidated efforts to cleanse the internet of pornography. Whatever you think of pornography, these things were written supposedly to protect children. It's always for the children. And circuit courts of appeals, that's the intermediate appellate court, throughout the country have invalidated legislation under Clinton, under Bush, and under Obama. And the Supreme Court has refused to accept the government's appeals to overturn those invalidations. So they haven't been bad on the First Amendment. Now, we run the risk of a social conservative like my college classmate Sam Alito joining the big government liberals. We run that risk of them thinking what they know is best for us to watch and listen to and hear. But if Justice Alito sticks to the guns, so to speak, of those who voted for the First Amendment the last time around, I think the First Amendment will prevail.
Well, even if the court says we don't have a First Amendment, possession is 9/10 of the law. We need to continue to exercise it, just like McCain-Feingold tried to block free speech. People just ignored it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, the other thing is, I mean, the judgment against Phelps here was provided under some Maryland law. Now, some states would not have such laws. Some states would say, you can stand on the sidewalk and say whatever you want. This creates the bizarre conundrum of the First Amendment meaning different things in different states. So if the Supreme Court says this is okay, we're going to uphold this judgment, it's about $8 million, which the church doesn't have, so it may just be a paper judgment. That may not be the law of the land in all 50 states. My own home state of New Jersey, regrettably one of the most progressive in the union, nevertheless, is superb on free speech. Under the New Jersey Constitution, you can stand on a street corner and say whatever you want to whomever you want at any time you want, as long as you're not, you know, preventing people from walking or preventing traffic.
I understand. Judge, on this legal issues, obviously you could teach us all day, and we appreciate you joining us on that subject. But last question, when should the court then release their ruling? In the next 2-3 months?
You know, they release a bunch of rulings three times, right before Christmas, in the middle of the spring, or say around April, and then in June. I think this one's probably going to come in April. I don't think this is going to come until next year. Not for any political reason, but just because the process of getting something like this done takes time.
Okay, I've got a stack of other important issues.
Go.
You talked about the Federal Reserve getting more power. It did get more power out of the crisis it created.
Right.
They were able to block a true audit in the Senate. Now it's being reported that $821.1 billion of U.S. Treasury notes are now owned by the private Federal Reserve. They are now the second biggest owner of our debt next to communist China. The Federal Reserve is moving ahead with quantitative easing. The dollar is plunging. Gold is going up. It's becoming more and more clear that we have a financial, military-style occupation of our country, and the bankers are getting record bonuses. They're openly not telling Congress where the trillions are. This is insane. Give us your take on the Federal Reserve being the second biggest owner of our debt. I mean, talk about national security, a private banking cartel, and then the communist Chinese. I mean, this is incredible.
Well, I actually think it's worse than that, Alex. I was on air with one of my colleagues speculating about what might happen if the Republicans take the House and the Republicans take the Senate. And the colleague said, well, at least they can refuse to fund FINRAG, the Financial Regulatory Act, the so-called Dodd-Frank Act. And I said, well, most respectfully, they can't. It's under the domain of the Federal Reserve. It doesn't need any funding. The Federal Reserve can print its own money and fund it itself. So the Federal Reserve is probably the most powerful entity on the planet, more powerful than the rest of the federal government combined. It's certainly the most secretive. This is a one-liner that you've used. The job of the CIA is to keep and to steal secrets. We know more about the CIA and what it has kept and what it has stolen and than we do about the Federal Reserve. And the Federal Reserve announced yesterday that it's ready to infuse another $1 trillion of cash into the marketplace. What will that do to the value of the dollar in the wallet of everybody listening, in the bank account of everybody listening, invested in the business of everyone listening who's invested in a business, and invested in the home of everyone listening who owns a home? It will decrease its value. When Jefferson and company were running the government in 1792, the Congress enacted the Coinage Act of 1792, which made it punishable by death for anybody in the government to clip coins, stated differently, to devalue the money. The Federal Reserve is doing exactly that which was death penalty eligible when sound money existed in the country. This is the most serious of problems we face. We need to audit the Federal Reserve. We need to audit Fort Knox, and I mean a real audit. We may open up the door and find a stadium full of gold, but it could be hypothecated, it could be pledged, it could be there, but owned by the Bank of China. We need to know who owns what. We need to know every penny the Federal Reserve has printed, every dime the Federal Reserve has spent, every quarter the Federal Reserve has loaned, every dollar the Federal Reserve is expecting back. Now, are we going to get that? I just put this question to Ron Paul not an hour ago in the taping of my weekend show. He thinks we're going to get these answers, but not tomorrow, and not as a result of this election, and not even during the presidency of this president, but in our lifetimes. He thinks we will reach such a crisis point, which he calls a revolution, where the government will be forced to expose what it's been doing, what it owns, what it's been cheating, what it's been stealing, or the government will collapse like the government of the Soviet Union did.
Well, Judge, that's the issue, is that you have the Vatican, you have the City of London within London, the private banking group. You have Cheney a few years ago saying, I'm my own branch of government. The Federal Reserve has actually gotten Congress to legislate that. They are literally the foxes guarding the hen houses. They are destroying our society, and they are the U.S. version of the most powerful thing on the planet, the private banking cartel.
Money.
From the front lines of the information war, it's Alex Jones.
We're back live, and for the balance of this transmission, the next hour and a half, conspiracy icon, as he's known, David Icke, is our guest. I agree with about 98% of what David Icke says. He's so articulate, former head of the Green Party in the UK, best-selling author many times over, championship goalie, very articulate, you can really put things in easy-to-understand ways. He can really take complex issues and do that. But David, you know, gets into basically something we never cover, and that's interdimensional or extraterrestrial-type entities. But, you know, once something's out in the open, once I can start proving that at least it's being discussed, we're going to talk later at the start of the next hour about UFOs. U.S. Air Force officers testify on UFO sightings at National Press Club. They said they were turning off nukes. It continues. Churchill and Eisenhower agreed to cover up RAF planes UFO encounter during World War II. Secret files reveal. I mean, it just goes on. From there, and more the media is hyping some type of alien landing. The UN announced last week they've appointed an ambassador to meet with the aliens. We are on a planet out in the middle of space here, you know, orbiting the sun in the Milky Way galaxy in our little solar system here. And I want to talk to David about why they're, you know, Larry King Live, all of them are basically saying, get ready for aliens to land. They've got all these TV shows like V and The Incident. And I know about Project Bluebeam, a program the government admits to fake UFOs. So we'll talk about that coming up in the next hour. First, I want to get into what's happening with the economy, the awakening that's happening. I want to ask David, he's been very busy, if he's seen this new video put out in England that they pulled by the 1010 Project, where it shows them murdering the children because they won't cut their carbon footprint, and murdering football players and murdering talk show hosts and murdering people in businesses. All these authority figures pushing a red button. The message is, we're your God. We control you. The system has gone from denying that they have a murderous agenda to coming out and saying, we want eco-fascism. It isn't about global warming. It's about reducing population. You know, man is a parasite. Man is the enemy. They're teaching us to hate ourselves. So we'll talk about that with David as well next. But first, David, the economy, gold at $1,342 an ounce. The currency's going down. The open world government being announced. Riots all over Europe against austerity. You've been proven right. Gerald Celente. So much of what you talked about 15, 16 years ago were called a loon. It's all coming true and right on the timeline you said, David.
Well, I said in September 2008, Alex, when this first recent crash became clear, that there was a three-step game going on here. The first step was to crash the economy so that people could see there was a problem. The next stage was to get governments to empty their barrels, if you like, to empty their ability to respond to it financially by hurling enormous, fantastic cuckoo land amounts of money at the banking system, which was designed from the start to disappear, which, of course, the vast majority of it has. And the third stage, which I'm now waiting for, is when they make the judgment that it's optimum moment, they crash the economy again in a way that governments have no longer any means of responding to it, even in the ludicrous way they did in the last couple of years. And then the banking system itself will be stepping forward as the savior, and they'll say the only way of sorting out this global mess is ABCD, and it will be a global economic tyranny based on a world central bank in which a few people sitting around one table will dictate finance to every country. This, of course, is where we've been going all along. You know, if there's a few of you, and compared with the 7 billion we're supposed to have on this planet, it is an absolute tiny few that are in full awareness behind this conspiracy. And if they are going to reach their goal of a fully fledged global dictatorship, then they have to incessantly centralize power. And the more power they have, the more power they have over more and more people. And the more power they have centrally, the more power they have to then centralize even quicker. And this is why the speed of globalization in all areas of our lives has got faster and faster. And of course, the Rockefeller Rothschild World Trade Organization is there to ensure that countries cannot defend themselves against the merciless world system, so that every country is dependent on forces and events that are outside their sphere of influence and outside their sphere of control and response. And this is the whole idea, to get everyone dependent on everyone else so that the few people at the center running this system have power over every area of our lives. I was talking to a journalist yesterday in England, a mainstream journalist, who was like saying he's seeing it. The centralization of power in the media is now blatant, and we're now reaching that point I talked about 15 years ago, where the agenda that for decade after decade, indeed century after century, has operated in the shadows, there comes a point where it has to break the surface when it's getting close to its final goal, but close to introducing the new world it wants to. Well, that new world is eventually going to break the surface where we can actually see it. It has to, otherwise it can't become the new world. And we're now at that point, and this is why we have a point here, Alex, of tremendous challenge, but tremendous opportunity. Because it's becoming so blatant, more and more people are seeing what they couldn't see before. So it's a real fork in the road we're facing here.
And David, you said that brilliantly. And you didn't toot your horn properly. Yes, 2 years ago you said we're going to have the banker bailouts. That will exhaust the central governments, the state governments, the regional governments. They will then announce a new global currency, and that's in Reuters and AP today, the Bancor, that will be digital, that then nations will have to borrow from the banks, that's made up out of nothing. But if you go back to the Trilateral Commission public documents from the 70s, they said, we will interconnect the world, we'll get everybody in debt, we will set it up where everybody's dependent on each other, we'll be outside of that as the global arbiters, then we'll implode the world economy and announce the new one-world government. And we have those documents, we have the Club of Rome, the UN, the Trilateral Commission, the CFR, and so everything we've talked about has come true because we were reading their playbook. And as you said, they denied it in public, though their white papers were available, but not, you know, widely distributed. Now they're getting ready to have their full takeover, so they have to go ahead and admit it's all real, but say it's our savior. David, how do you see this playing out in year one, year two, year three, year four, year five? You say, and I tend to agree with you, that the main flash isn't 2012, but projecting the lines forward around 2015, 2016, the riots have already begun. The Pentagon admits global meltdown, but they say martial law is the answer when they've engineered it. The British Ministry of Defense says the same thing. The UN, they are getting ready for this. The rich are moving offshore to private redoubts and islands. They're hardening the police departments against the citizens. Google admits they're NSA and can, quote, predict the future and are surveilling everything we're doing. They're admitting they're taking our blood secretly at birth. They're admitting the vaccines are killing us, but they don't care. I mean, it's just all coming out.
The answer to 1984 is 1776. You're listening to The Alex Jones Show.
Some people are waking up now that all of this is so apparent, saying Alex Jones, Ron Paul, David Icke, so many others were right, but others are choosing to then, out of fear, just accept the evil because it's so overwhelming. What's the psychological warfare point here, and what do you see happening in these phases?
Well, I think, first of all, Alex, is as you pointed out, you know, if you're prepared to do the research and you're prepared to focus your life on this stuff over the years, you don't have to be a prophet because this stuff's written down. I mean, you know, we knew what was coming because it's there to find if you want to look for it. But we have reached this amazing point where people people are finding, even those with their head in the sand. By the way, as I say in my new book, if you to have your head in the sand, you have to be on your knees, and the two things go together. And it's time we got off our knees. And to do that, first of all, we've got to get our heads out of the bloody sand and actually face what we're dealing with here. And we're at this amazing point now where they can't hide it anymore, and humanity is faced with a choice that will be more and more difficult for it to persuade itself and kid itself that there's not a choice to be made, because it's really not happening. It's just conspiracy theory. No, this is in our face now. So we're entering very fast, Alex, a totally new phase in this game, in this unfolding conspiracy to impose a global fascist communist state, because they're both masks on the same face anyway. And for me, we are going to continue to go down this road for some years yet, where it seems that this control system is going incessantly in the direction it wants to and is unstoppable. But I am absolutely convinced that in the years between 2016 to 2020, that period, there is going to be enough people who have awoken to this and can see this, there's going to come a tipping point. And they are trying to... What they've been trying to do all these years, Alex, is to bring in the surveillance, the control, the data surveillance, the surveillance of where you go on the internet, surveillance of every area of your life, to bring in the more and more the militarization of law enforcement, even domestic law enforcement. It's happening all over the world. You see a policeman now, and often you can't tell them from the military.
And we see a total continuity of agenda where they do snatch and grabs in front of news cameras at the G20 in England, at Pittsburgh in the U.S., in Toronto in Canada. We see the same cameras, the same body scanners. We see global drills set up months ago for the surge on trains and bus stations and airports, and they admit it's a global drill that coincides with the latest scare of terrorist bombers. It's the same system, the same nomenclature, run by the same corporate Borg.
Yeah, but this is the point, Alex. While they've, of course, been using terrorists as the excuse and terrorism as the excuse, we well know that what it's really been constructed for and constantly added to for is the population, the general population. That's what it's for. And it's not even for the population that will stay asleep or go into a freeze mode through fear of what they're seeing. It's for those people who are waking up, and it's for those people who are prepared to do something. And so, it's so important for people to appreciate that this is not made up by the day or the month or the week or the year or even the decade. This has been long projected forward. And so all the different elements of it, the understanding of what they're going to do in terms of the economic crash, et cetera, et cetera, the way that's going to be received by the public, we're seeing it now, more and more unrest, et cetera. And a parallel to that, another wing of this conspiracy has been preparing for this with the excuse of terrorism to bring in all these anti-terrorist laws and all these institutions to fight terrorism or to track terrorism, which have all been designed for the general population all along.
And they admit that. This is so central, and this is what I talk about every day, but you do it so eloquently. 95% of Homeland Security is for veterans, gun owners, libertarians, conservatives, anti-globalists, anti-war people, anybody that doesn't play along with their controlled paradigm. And now we've gotten a secret Department of Justice new document up on Infowars.com. DOJ urges citizens to report extremists handing out literature like the Obama Joker poster. They are now... It's come out that Israeli companies were hired by Homeland Security in Pennsylvania to spy on mainline Tea parties and state representatives, and they said that the state reps may be terrorists. I mean, there is an arc, and now Der Spiegel admits the former East German Stasi was hired in the U.S. and in Europe to help set up this grid. I mean, now the Stasi are going to save us.
Yeah, well, if we've reached the point where there's a new stage in the psychological warfare. up to this point, it's been like, keep it under wraps, keep it secret, dismiss and ridicule so-called conspiracy theorists, because it seems that the humans have a genetic inability to say the word conspiracy without following it with theory. And just say it's all a nonsense, it's not really happening. And that gives you a cover story and time to build your control system more and more powerfully and in more and more of the fine detail of people's lives. But now we've reached another psychological point where they're basically saying, yes, I know a lot more people are going to see it now, but it doesn't matter because we're all powerful and we can do what we like. And we're going to show you that we can do what we like because we're going to put this on public display more and more and more. Now, what are you going to do? Are you going to take us on because we're all powerful and we can do anything we want? Or are you going to just be like good little sheep and good little slaves and just do what you're told, keep your head down, keep your mouth shut, and hope that that will see you okay.
So they've now gone to the pure intimidation. They've taken the velvet glove off, and they go,
exactly.
They go, you bet we did. We gave children syphilis in injections in Guatemala.
Yes,
you bet
exactly.
We're poisoning your vaccine. You bet we run death camps. You bet, you know, Halliburton and DynCorp run child kidnapping rings. You bet we're evil. And so they're trying to intimidate us. You bet we're watching you if you hand out any literature. You don't do that in America or the UK. You bet we're listening to your phone calls. You bet we want to reduce your population. Just like all these new TV ads and cartoons and video games where it shows the environmentalists murdering people if they don't accept the carbon tax dictatorship. Have you seen that new video?
I've not, but it makes absolute sense to this whole thing that we're talking about here, because we have reached the point now where, you know, we've got to decide, are we going to be people who are going to stand up, or are we going to be mice and just scuttle away and try to hide in the corner in the skirting board somewhere? Because this is what they're saying to us now. Okay, come on, you can see it. What are you going to do about it? And we need to have the courage and the backbone to say, yeah, we're not having it. We're not having it, because this is the truth. There's a fraction of the number of people in this world who are being manipulated, who are being intimidated, who are being having their lives controlled, who have been turned into a slave race. A fraction of those people on Earth are actually doing it, and the vast majority are having it done to them. I think I see a way out of this, and you know, if we realize that the number advantage the manipulated, abused, and suppressed have over those who are in full awareness doing it, the game is over.
Absolutely, amen to that. The enemy is now out in the open. It has uncloaked itself. Are you going to stand up against this? Because submitting to it means death.
Big Brother. Mainstream media. Government cover-ups. You want answers? Well, so does he. He's Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network. And now, live from Austin, Texas, Alex Jones.
We're live, ladies and gentlemen, 8 minutes into hour number three. It is Tuesday, the 5th day of October, 2010. The iconic David Icke is our guest. We're going to talk about a host of other key issues here in just a moment. But finishing up, if you just joined us, David was getting into the fact that, and if you go back to Edward Bernays 80 years ago, who advised the Department of War and the Department of Defense, and he's the reason you eat bacon with eggs. He's the reason there's a music room. You've got to have that piano in the house to be classy. They wrote up the feminist movement to break up the family, to get women working so they could double tax and break up families, even if women wanted to stay home and raise the children. They brag about this, and they said the number one goal is to make you feel inadequate, to make you feel worthless, so they can then sell you on their, quote, new ideas. And what David was saying is mirrored by the article at PrisonPlanet.com, climate cult indoctrinating our kids with depraved death wish. And it, the second article Watson wrote over the weekend on this, climate cult indoctrinating our kids with depraved death wish. And it deals with, they're teaching them, you're worthless, you're bad, humans are evil. So that we're already desensitized with violence and death on television and simulated murders. So when we see the real thing, a lot of people don't care. Or watch some old lady hit by a car, bleed to death for 2 hours in the street, or a cop hit by a car. You see these reports all the time. People not rendering aid, not just disliking themselves, but hating everyone else. They're destroying our connectivity to each other. And it's so wicked, they don't want us to know how special we are. The mind that gave you Shakespeare and Beethoven and Socrates and mathematics and Max Planck 100 years ago, 110 years ago now, literally envisioning in his mind the atomic theory and atomic weapons and atomic energy, a species that's brought us space travel. We're supposed to love the dolphins, love the elephants. But then we're trash, we're scum, we're worthless, we don't have a right to have children. And this is so central. David, please continue.
Well, you know, Alex, I've been writing my books for years that this is no new phenomenon. The process we're now experiencing, if you want to use the version of time that we perceive as time, then you're talking thousands, probably tens of thousands, maybe more years, that this has been slowly but surely unfolding. And the same techniques have been used all along. There'll be people listening to this program won't like this, but, you know, what we're talking about here is the same principle as telling people that by the very fact that they were born, the very process of birth, they are a sinner. And fundamental to that is to make people feel small, insignificant, they have no power. Because people who believe they have no power do not express the power they have. Because we are constantly expressing our self-perception, our self-identity. So if you can get people to feel that they are useless, they're worthless, they're just, Prince Philip once alluded to the humanity, just a virus, and basically just you should have contempt for yourself and everything that you stand for, and the human race collectively the same, then you are going to perceive yourself in that way. You're going to manifest your life in that way. You're not going to see the true magnitude of who you are, consciousness, capable of all and much greater feats of awareness and creation than even the ones you've just listed, Alex. This is who we really are. Now, you imagine billions of people on this planet who are in awareness of the full magnitude, scale, potential, infinite possibility of who we are. A few people controlling them from a central point, forget it, no chance. So fundamental to this is to disconnect us from a true awareness of who we are, and to put us both in a box of self-perception of being worthless, but also in a box of little me, I have no power. Because people who think they have no power, they look up or look out to people who have the power. And it, funny enough, it is the perception that these few have power over us that leads to them having power over us. Oh, you can't, it's all too powerful, there's nothing you can do about it. Watch me. You know, the numbers alone say that the game is only...
Well, what's happening is
to it.
They impose a predetermination that we're going to fail, a predetermined a determination that we have no power, so that people just think it's absolutely lost. You've just got to go along with everything that's happening. You have to submit to the evil, and they are just pushing this like never before. Now, David, shifting gears, because...
Can I just say one thing, Alex, very
sure.
quickly? You know, what we're talking about here is connected to something that I've been writing about for some time. I know I go into deeply into stuff sometimes that people go, you know, that's too far out for me. But what the human body is a receiver transmitter of information. It's like a computer. Now, if you program a computer, like on a desktop, you program that to only read information within certain firewalls, then that will be the computer's reality. That is what you're going to get on the screen in terms of the computer manifesting its...
Well, that's what
reality.
The term conspiracy theory is. They throw it out there as a computer command. Do not read this information. Do not see it. Disregard it.
So what they're doing is systematically programming humanity, programming the body computer, which is the vehicle, not the real us. We are consciousness, infinite awareness, but it's the vehicle we use to experience this reality we call the world. And it's systematically programming that computer through various means, through education, through media, through all these things, to only perceive a certain reality. And in doing so, what happens? The computer only reads that reality. And you do not then have the perception of the true magnitude of who we are. Now, everything connects to everything else. They are bombarding us with electrochemical poisons and pollutions in food and drink and the genetically modified food, which is designed to genetically modify us. Genetically modify what? Genetically modify, i.e. change the way that the body computer receives and transmits information. That's what they're doing. And in all these ways, they are destabilizing and limiting and distorting how we read reality, because on one level, the body is clearly an electrochemical organism, and it has a particular electrochemical balance. It has a genetic balance. It has a DNA balance. And once you start distorting that, it no longer reads reality to the potential that it had before. It's like having a virus in your desktop computer. It doesn't work the same. And this is what is happening. It's a systematic distortion of the way we read reality by distorting the body chemically, electromagnetically, and also in the way that we perceive by the manipulation of the information we receive. It's the information that we're receiving, Alex, from the media and what bravely calls itself education and all these sources is no different in its basic theme than actually programming a computer so it reads reality in a certain way. That's what they're doing.
And I see an ace in the hole for the globalist, because they admit with Project Bluebeam and other reports that have been partially declassified that for 50 years, the British government, the Pentagon, and others have actually hyped UFO stories as a cover for some of their secret technology, but also at a key point to unify the planet, as Kissinger talked about and Ronald Reagan and many others, that what if aliens invaded? We would then unify. And the government admits they've got secret programs with huge hologram projectors, you name it, to have, you know, Christ return, aliens land,
yeah.
Buddha, Muhammad. They admit this. And suddenly you have all these mainstream media reports we're going to go over after the break where they're saying, oh, looks like aliens might be real. Eisenhower and Churchill knew. You know, and now the UN announces we've appointed an ambassador for when the aliens arrive. I mean, they're and we've got, you know, top physicists coming out and saying the aliens are going to be mean when they come.
This is a complex subject, well, slightly complex, in that there's two angles to it. First of all, the idea that humans are the only species of like in this universe is utterly, utterly ludicrous, insane, and beyond belief. And one day when we wake up a bit more, people are going to say, how could we ever believe it, in the same way as how could we ever believe the Earth was flat? However, governments and authorities are looking at and responding to information of this kind. There has been a blatant decision that there is going to be a total change. More and more stuff out there. It's not going to be laughed at anymore and denied in the way it was before, because they are building up to something here, which will be a disclosure that will be a fake disclosure, a disclosure that leads to the reaction they want